From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Tuesday night when Rochester City Council approved the city budget in an 8-1 vote. Among the subjects of debate was, of course, defunding police. Advocacy groups have called for the Rochester police budget to be cut by 50% next fiscal year, but most members of council voted against that. As reported by WXXI's James Brown, the approved budget includes a nearly 4% cut to RPD's $95 million allocation. It also diverted $130,000 in police overtime used for special events into the Department of Recreation and Youth Services. An additional measure approved by council cut the number of incoming police academy recruits of 38 in half. City Council President Loretta Scott joined seven of her colleagues in standing against a 50% cut, saying that no groundwork has been done to determine why that percentage was determined or to establish an alternative policing model. Councilmember Mary Lupien was the sole opposing vote on council to the budget. She is in favor of the 50% cut to the police allocation and supports shifting duties that now fall to police, like responding to mental health checks, drug overdose, mediation. She wants to shift them to experts in those fields, not police. This hour, we're joined by members of council to discuss their votes and their perspectives on the role of government when it comes to police reform. And in many ways, it appears that council is signaling they want to go in the same direction eventually. It's a question of how to get there and when. And this is part of a continuing series of conversations on this subject of police reform on this program. I'd like to welcome our guests now. Jackie Ortiz is a member of Rochester City Council. Jackie, welcome back to the program.
Great. Thank you, Evan.
Willie Lightfoot is Vice President of Rochester City Council. Willie, welcome back to you.
Thank you, Evan.
And you're going to hear Willie. Willie's working. Willie Lightfoot.
And you're the Clippers back there.
You know what? Let me tell you. You know Jeff McCain, the Deputy County Executive?
Oh, yeah.
I got his son in the chair. That's how real it is.
That's very good. Willie Lightfoot is working and talking to us. We appreciate that. Mary Lupien is a member of Rochester City Council. Mary, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And Stanley Martin is a member of Free the People Rock, and she is one of four women who have been helping lead the civil rights movement protests that you've been seeing in demonstrations. Stanley, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Well, what I want to do is just members of council, just off the top here, take me through why you voted the way you voted, and then we'll get more specific. And we know, Jackie Ortiz, that the subject of police reform was going to be a debate here. We have seen other cities like Minneapolis make some seriously significant changes to policing in a very short amount of time. It does seem to me that from the public statements of members of council, there is a desire to go in the same direction here, if not with the same total measure or at least short-term steps. Where do you want to go, Jackie, with police reform? And tell me why you voted yes with a 4% cut this year.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Great question. And I think at this point, just so that at least I'm clear, and then obviously my colleagues can jump in here, no one has ever said that we did not want to go down this path, that we were not interested in what it would look like to have a completely reimagining of deployment and cutting of resources to then reinvest them in other places. So I want to be clear that I am totally in favor of that given a solid plan. And the reason that at this point in time that I felt like the cuts that we've been able to make so far were a start was because up until about, I don't know, maybe 4 or 6 weeks ago, the idea of quote unquote defunding and of 50% per se had just become, if you will. There wasn't really something that we were contemplating. Now, we were always contemplating, you know, reform and continued transformation, obviously, with the start of the work of the PAB, all of those things. But that particular phrase and request just started about a month or so ago. And I totally understand why. And I'm in favor of trying to get there. I just at this point would like to have further conversation of how exactly do we do that so that we can ensure that public safety of what it looks like for people today are comfortable in making that transition to where we really need to get to. And I'm there. So what does it look like? How do we get there? How does this transition of dollars work? Where does it go? I just really, for me, maybe it's the business owner in me, really need to have a solid financial plan to be able to implement.
All right. And the 4% cut this year, Do you feel like it's just a step in that direction as council and the city build a long-term plan?
For me, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it is it's a start. I mean, we understand that it's a drop in the bucket based on what people are looking for. But for me, it's a start. And when I say, and when we agreed to try to formulate, you know, this task force and or committee of folks to look into this, this was not something to be long-term. For me, when I signed on for this, it was the transition team to figure out how to do it. And so this is not, this is me, the 6 months, no more than a year. Let's get this done and figure it out. So yes, it was a start with the understanding that we would come up with a plan on how to get it done.
Willie Lightfoot, as Vice President of Rochester City Council, tell me about your vote and your thoughts on long-term police reform.
Thank you, Evan. My vote, of course, was a lot similar sentiments that I have of my colleague, Councilperson Ortiz there. Very similar. I felt the same way. And not only that, I mean, let's be real. I mean, a lot of this civil unrest is what really pushed this movement forward. And if the civil unrest is the reason, then we have to get to the root of what that is. And to me, that's institutional and structural racism. So if we're going to talk about institutional and structural racism, then we must talk about that throughout all systems. It's not just embedded in the police department. It's embedded in the fire department. It's embedded in DES. It's embedded in rec center. It's embedded in every system that we have. It's embedded in not-for-profit. It's embedded in for-profit. It's embedded in all of our healthcare system. In every system, education, anything that we can actually speak out of, institutional and structural racism is historically embedded in all of those systems. So I like the idea of the task force, because at the end of the day, we're going to look at county government, how we operate, city government, how we operate with an equity lens, then I think we'll have more success than just throwing it a kind of like just a dart at the police department, when ultimately if the root of the problem of the civil unrest is structural and systematic racism, then we got to look at all systems. Now, I agree that we have a lot to work to do on the police department. And that's why I agreed to decreasing the class by 50%. That's why I agreed to putting forth the most robust police accountability reform in the country. That's why I agreed to looking at all of the policy practices and procedures of the police department and training so that we can have a better department. But let's face it, if we had to cut the police department by 50%, one of the things that our city, in the input section of the budget, the community section said that they wanted to have was public safety. The second thing that they said, people said in our community over the years, that they wanted people that represent them to be recruited on the police department. Well, we've been doing that. We've been recruiting extensively, trying to hire people of color. We've made a lot of progress in that area, even though we have the consent decree and other civil service law rules. And if we had to cut the police department in half, the majority of those people that would have been let out the door would have been people of color, which would have just totally disregarded all the work that we've done to try to have a more diverse department.
All right. Mary Lupien, you were the lone vote against the budget because you did want to see an immediate move to a 50% cut. Take me through your thought process there.
Sure. You know, and my decision was not made in a vacuum. You know, I was in communication with the leaders of Free the People Rock, and a lot of, you know, we got 947 emails asking us to cut the police department budget. So it was a decision that I didn't take lightly, but I know that there's a lot of support for. And I, too, you know, with my colleagues, you know, I feel the same way, that, you know, we need to be looking at, you know, diversion of cases from the police to other, you know, qualified experts. You know, there's some programs out there, like in Eugene, Oregon, they have CAHOOTS, which, you know, they divert 24,000 calls a year. We actually have FACET in Rochester, so we actually have the framework, but we only divert 3,500 calls a year. So we have some of the bones of this program. And so the main reason that I wanted the 50% cut, you know, and acknowledging that we didn't have a formulated plan, is that it's a commitment, and it's putting our money where our mouth is. You know, we said we were going to form a, you know, a task force to look at this specific issue. and, you know, maybe release a recommendation in 3 or 6 months at the time we were talking about, you know, before the vote. But I know how, you know, political pressure works, and it's hard to sustain it. It's not that the desire goes away. It's just people get tired. And in 6 months, when, you know, people maybe lose focus, and I hope we don't, but it's a lot harder to make those drastic changes because we get comfortable and the status quo is very, very strong. And so I felt it was very important to make that commitment while we were in the moment. And the, you know, the people were there. And so, you know, I'm very skeptical of this new task force that's been formed because the focus isn't specifically on what are we going to do with the Rochester Police Department. You know, it's been brought into the entirety of racial and structural inequity, not just the city, but the whole county. And it has 6 months to return a recommendation. So, you know, that was the basis for my decision.
And before I get Stanley's take, just to follow up on one point here, Mary, as you know, there was debate about just how much emphasis the city budget puts on funding police. And you have pointed out that when you look at the numbers, it adds up to the police department and Rochester Police getting funded more than anything else. And our James Brown from WXXI News talked to Mayor Warren, who said that her quote about this was, "I don't know if that is ignorance or malice, but the one thing it doesn't do is bring any concrete solutions to the table. Those spreading falsehoods choose to incite. It reminds me of what my community has been facing for generations. One thing our city doesn't need is any member of this council failing to speak the truth, particularly anyone who stated that the city funds the police more than anyone else. Simply put, it is false, and you should have known it was false when you said it, and that ignorance should be disqualifying," end quote. I know you heard those comments. Those are very strong comments from the mayor. I'm looking at the numbers myself, and based on the numbers I'm reading, I'm trying to dispassionately read this here as much as I can, mm-hmm. just understand the numbers. The number I'm looking at is when you take the current expense budget for police, $95.8 million, employee benefits attached to police, $51.8 million, that comes out to $147.7 million. Mm-hmm. When you add up library, youth services, RCSD, that comes out to $143 million. From what I'm looking
right.
at, you are correct. But I'm trying to read this dispassionately. Am I missing something?
Yeah.
Did you learn something from the mayor's comments, or is she wrong?
No, and we actually had this conversation today. And I don't want to spend too long on this, because as long as we're talking about numbers, we're not talking about,
I hear that,
you know, the real issue.
But I think it matters if we understand what we're prioritizing.
No, I understand. So from the mayor, she's thinking I'm talking about the entire Department of Youth and Recreation Services, which I wasn't. I was just talking about the youth services portion of it. And it's to display a point, you know, and if you add in the whole Department of Youth and Recreation Services, it's $153 million, which is a difference of just,
$7
million?
$6 million, yeah.
So, you know, to her point, if we go her route, it's not, but it's also extremely close. So it's just to display the point of where we do spend our money in the city of Rochester. And, you know, when you do factor in employee benefits, which I think is fair to put on the table, it's, you know, $7 million aside, if you want to talk about the whole department or just this piece of it with youth services, I think I've illustrated the point.
Okay. Were you disappointed in the mayor's comments? I mean, she took some real hard shots at you for voting the way you did.
Well, I certainly wasn't expecting it, because from my point of view, I wasn't attacking her personally, so I wasn't expecting a personal attack back. But that's kind of the power dynamics, you know, in City Hall. When you step out of line, there can be punishment. And I've been torn down on a public call before for advocating for the homeless to be taken out of shelters and put in hotels, because it was somebody misunderstood my comments as being from the whole city instead of just my personal view. And it's just, you know, it's just the way that it is. And I'm disappointed, of course, but it's not going to stop me from speaking my truth.
Stanley Martin, as a member of Free the People Rock that has been organizing these very powerful demonstrations for weeks now, and for organizing an idea of what a new kind of policing would look like, Can you lay out for me how you feel, number one, how you feel about council's vote, but also if you feel that council is aligned in a long-term mission, as Jackie Ortiz and Willie Lightfoot are telling us, which is that, you know, there are some serious goals of reform that it might not be achievable right now in this very budget in this month, but there is a goal to get there. And does that feel like something you can work with?
So I'm listening to what members of council have said, specifically Jackie Ortiz and Councilman Lightfoot and Councilwoman Ortiz. And I'm just thinking about how, you know, far removed from the actual issues that Councilmember Ortiz's comments, you know, show. She's saying that it's only recently that people are asking for defunding the police or by 50%, which is absolutely not true. Think of Angela Davis, think of the Black Panthers, think of all these movements of Black liberation and critical resistance. They didn't sit there and say, we need a plan to stop the police from killing us. They're saying, we know the police are killing us. We have these lived experiences. This is a white supremacist institution, and their ideology is grounded in inherent oppression. And they've been demanding for decades for change. And this is the same ideology we have within our city and within what the Black Lives Matter movement is fighting for. I know Councilman Lightfoot mentioned some of the professions that also have institutional racism within them. However, firefighters, which was one of the professions he listed, they're not going into burning buildings and beating up and murdering Black people when they're called for help. We know that the police are, which creates a very different power dynamic and paints a very different picture of what these other institutions that uphold institutional racism result in and the brutality and violence that can escalate within that. I'm thinking of how council voted, and when it comes to institutional racism, our city budget is in fact extremely racist. We are underfunding Black and brown people in our city who do the essential work, who do the real labor. And instead, we're giving our money, our tax-paying dollars from Black and brown people to white men who do not live in our city. So when we think about institutional racism, like Councilman Lightfoot mentioned, we should start with the city budget and think about why we are upholding racist structures with the taxpayer money of Black and brown people. I do hear that there is some interest in eventually defunding the police when it's convenient, when it's the right time, when you have a business plan. I feel like that's simply not enough. If you go in any community and you ask them, what do we need? And they say they need public safety, like Willie mentioned, public safety does not equate to the police. People are asking for help. Public safety is grounded in resources, in healthcare and education. So we should stop creating this false dichotomy between public safety and the police, because the police do not keep us safe. Resources do.
So let me ask first Councilmember Ortiz to respond to that. Stanley Martin is saying that this incremental move is not enough right now, not with what communities are facing and feeling, and doesn't seem urgent enough given the circumstances. What would you say to that, Councilmember Ortiz?
And I understand, absolutely. And I think that we have tried to move as quickly as we can, and we've tried to make as large transformations. Again, it took us about a year and a half, 2 years to work through the process of community input and putting together the structure of a PAB, trying to pass that legislation. And so, I mean, we understand there are so many things to still to do, and we're still fighting that battle because obviously we are in a legal battle to now have to fight an appeal for that. And so I understand that incremental change isn't working. And I am absolutely willing to make large changes on there. But again, for me, and I understand what you're saying, for years and years that people have been talking about this, but at least for me here in Rochester specifically, this notion of 50% and doing that in a week or so, because by the time a lot of this really came to a head, all of this stuff has already been printed and set. I understand making the commitment, and I'm willing to do that, absolutely. But I just felt like for what was set in stone at this very moment, that we just need a little bit more time to be able to figure out how to do this. The last thing I want to have happen is have other and unintended consequences. And again, I don't know what all that looks like yet. right? But whenever you make big changes like this, there are always other unintended consequences. Perhaps they are nothing outweighing all the stuff that we would fix by doing it, which, again, I'm there. I just, for me, just need a little bit more time to have a better understanding of exactly how we would get this done. I'm not asking for years. I'm not asking for any of that. I'm just trying to give us a little bit more time to work through one budget cycle to try to figure out how to make this happen. And so I understand incremental is not enough. I'm with you. I don't think 6 months to a year is not necessarily something you can say is not fast enough. I guess that's my opinion.
So let me do this then. Let me ask all four of our guests, and I want to start with Stanley on this. What does in your...
Hold on 1 second, Evan.
Go ahead, Willie.
You said you were going to let both of us respond.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead, Willie. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, 2 points that I actually... One, I agree with Stanley, and one I disagree with. The one about the police department, the fire department being... not as racist as the police because they're not killing people. Well, anytime they don't hire someone in our community that looks like us or give opportunities for success of the American dream, they're killing people. They're killing dreams. They're killing people's ability to have a better quality of life anytime that door is shut to a black and brown person to be able to give the ability to have those type of jobs. So that's, to me, ridiculous. And to say that they're not making the same impact within our community. It absolutely are. I spent 20 years on the Rochester Fire Department, 13 years in the United States Air Force, two of the most racist institutions that I believe I've ever been around. So I've lived this experience. I'm a black man. I have three black young sons, okay, that live in this community. I'm here on Jefferson Avenue right now, so I'm not removed from anything. I'm totally connected to what's going on in our community. And I would say to make a statement that the police department are all killing people, I think it's disrespectful to a lot of the men and women who put on that uniform, who do the job right every day, to paint a broad brush that every police officer is killing people or disrespecting people, or doing people wrong, is just plain outright wrong. And now what I do agree with, though, when it comes to the budget, and which we've addressed in this budget, everybody went past the most important part to me in that budget, which is the first time it's ever been in the budget. Rochester has been one of the seven communities that's chosen by the National League of Cities to do racial equity and leadership work. Mary Lupien, Councilperson Lupien, was involved in this workshop and workshops that we've been doing. She knows the work that we've been doing over the last 2 years to begin to look at all of our policy, practices, and procedures with a racial equity lens. And we've been pushing this work for 2 years. And for the first time, this administration, this mayor, this administration, this council has put a racial equity tool within our budget, because we know the budget is racist and we want to change that. But that's decades of systematic institutional situations that have been happening that we're trying to undo. And it's not going to happen overnight. But we took a step 2 years ago already with acknowledging first that there's a problem and then putting our foot to the plow and committing to the racial equity and leadership work, putting it in our budget and going forward, coming up with a long term, short term and midterm and long term plan for how we undo racism within our city structure. So that's in the budget too, but nobody talks about that. And that was before there was a uprising. That was before. We didn't need an uprising. We didn't need a riot. We didn't need to do any of that. We've been doing this work. We've been understanding and admitting that there are structural institutional racism issues within our city and within our community. We've never ignored that. We've been up front and we've been leading the way in that conversation.
Now, I got to let Stanley respond because you know, I know, Stanley, you and your co-organizers have urged the public to take up the cry of stop killing black people. I mean, this is something we see at a lot of rallies, signs. Willie is saying that this is broad brushing police, and saying that police are killing black people is too much of a broad brush and it ignores the good work that's going on and it's unfair. What would you say to that, Stanley?
I would say that is absolute nonsense. I am intentionally using a broad brush because the problem with policing is that it is the whole institution is bad. If you have one nice person on the police force, it does not change the inherent structural racism and inherent violence of that institution. We need something that is not the police. We need community-led public safety. We keep trying to reform the police. We keep doing things like banning chokeholds or even creating a police accountability board that we see is not being it's now toothless because we're still trying to reform the police. The Police Accountability Board is a great idea, but look how long, look how much work it took to even create it. And instantly, the Locust Club, an institution the city continues to engage with, just stopped it, put it on hold. So these reformist ideologies are simply not working. With Rochester taking up all these racial equity lenses and all these different commissions that result to exactly nothing, I'm saying it's time for something different. I think we need to be bold in calling things out, and I really, really want to double down on saying the whole system of policing is bad, and there is not a single good thing about it.
So Stanley, then let me then follow up, because I think we need to hear from all four of our guests. Stanley Martin is a member of Free the People Rock, and Mary Lupien and Willie Lightfoot, Jackie Ortiz from Rochester City Council. Stanley, let me follow up with you and ask all of our guests then, give me your vision, whether it's a year from now, 5 years, whenever it could happen, whenever it's achievable. Give me your vision for what policing looks like in this city.
So my vision for what public safety looks like in this city is something that is community-led and includes the voices of the most directly impacted people in our city. Currently, the commission created by the mayor and members of city council is grounded in, you know, the political elite. A former mayor leading a commission to address policing, when we know the mayor and the police office and are just very interconnected, the mayor's office and the police are the police are an extension of the mayor's power. So we know there's no way that can be an equitable solution to making real change. So what I see is the community coming together and being asked, what do you imagine public safety looking like, and creating those ideas. I believe it comes from defunding the police completely and putting those resources into therapists, substance use disorder treatments, mental health, youth recreation, and having leaders in the community resolve problems. When people call the police, they're calling for help. So we create spaces for people who are from those neighborhoods to offer help when people are called for help. So I don't really see a future for policing. It's just too detrimental. It's too dangerous. It's taking away too many Black and brown lives. And it's really a public health crisis.
So it sounds like there will be no official police officers in the future that you envision. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We will have security grounded in public trust, grounded in people choosing members of their community who they trust to offer help and support. We can definitely do that. And that future is definitely possible. We have to think bigger than what we're socialized to believe that we believe we need.
Councilmember Lupien, do you agree with that?
I would love to see a future where we don't need police officers. You know, the institution was, I think, the very first recorded, you know, history is around needing to deal with alcoholics. And then, you know, the institution really came into force to stop runaway slaves. So the institution was really founded in racism. But, you know, if we look at, like, how do you deal with alcoholics? You can't police alcoholism. You know, that's a societal failure. And obviously we don't want to continue to perpetuate keeping Black people in line at the behest of white property owners. Like, that, if we look at the institution, it's not all that different today. But, you know, in what I would like to see is, you know, things that do not belong, and the police will freely admit that they're not trained to do and don't want to do, you know, to be diverted to mental health professionals, drug addiction counselors, mediators, you know, that come to a situation with a high level of de-escalation training, without a gun. You know, I hear a lot of, well, you know, that officer that got shot when he showed up to, you know, a mental health crisis, well, he's not trained to do that. And, you know, coming to a situation with a gun and with a uniform, just that alone escalates the situation. And so I feel like, you know, we have the FACET team, Family and Crisis Intervention, that does some of that work already. I would like to see in Rochester that you know, there'd be a mechanism for calls to be diverted at the 911 center to that team instead of armed officers, and even a way for the community to call them directly, because right now you have to call the police show up, and then dispatch the facet unit, which, you know, I think kind of in some ways defeats the purpose. You know, I think that the money that we would save needs to be invested in the community. We know that when kids get a quality education, they're supported in the home, they have a stable home, you know, their parents have jobs, that crime decreases. And I think, you know, using the police to create public safety, I think subscribes to the model that, or the philosophy that crime is an individual moral failing, and people need to be punished, when really crime is a societal failing. And so we need to invest the money in the community supports that build strong communities and create safe neighborhoods. So that's the future I would like to see.
And before I turn to Council Members Lightfoot and Ortiz, just briefly, let me turn back to Stanley Martin to make sure I understand, because when you talk about a future with no official police officers, essentially an abolition of police, I'm certainly aware that since the killing of George Floyd, there has been a real movement in polling and in views about certain issues of reform. And I know that these things are not static. I mean, views are moving in a lot of different directions here. But from what I have seen recently, two things, when you ask people, Americans who are black, and I know it's not a monolithic community, there's a lot of different views, but from what I've seen in recent polling, the idea of defunding the police is now supported by a majority of black Americans, at least 57% in the latest polling. But the idea of abolition of police is still roundly rejected by most black Americans. Again, that's from the most recent polling I've seen, knowing that it could be moving. Dr. Rashad Altimer on this program recently told us that, you know, if you talk to different neighborhoods, there's a lot of people, a lot of Americans who are black who want more police, not less. So it's complex, but generally abolition is not something people want. And Stanley, do you feel like the future that you want and are calling for is, at least at the moment, is it out of step with most black Americans, or is that the direction you think it's going?
So I think defunding of police is one of the ways to eventually abolish the police. But I do think that because of how we are socialized, or in fact colonized, we tend to think that we need different mechanisms to save us, like the police. But think about when this, when it all started, right? We hear people are always afraid, people who live in neighborhoods with very minimal resources and scarcity. There's fear of violence, there's fear of, you know, being left to, you know, suffer from many different things. But I do think the answer is giving more resources to those communities to make the police obsolete. Because once again, we know that when there people have access to livable wages, people have access to safe housing. We know when people have education, the whole idea of crime is not very present or pertinent in those communities. So I do think it's going to take more conversations, more education, more access to resources to get to that point. But I think for now, people calling for defunding the police really is a sign that they can imagine abolition. You know, you're cutting the amount of police we see on the streets. You're cutting the services police essentially don't really provide, and redirecting that to counselors and mental health workers, people who can actually help. So when we model these realities, like let's say someone calls for help and a counselor comes and everything is solved, it creates, you know, an example of how help can come without having the police presence. So I do think it's going to take a paradigm shift to get to abolition, but defunding is one of the steps towards abolition. And I think that's okay. We're not a monolithic group, but we're asking for defunding because we know that that's what people want. And the surveys you mentioned show that.
Councilmember Lightfoot, do you want to see an eventual abolition of police?
Absolutely not. The most people, I'm here on Jefferson Avenue right now. The most people who need the police is people of color. Let's state the facts. The city government is not structured in a way where we hire mental health providers, where we hire psychologists. We don't hire any nurses. That's not the way we're structured. The county is structured for social services. But nobody's saying defund the sheriff's department or putting this on the county, because it seems like it's just going towards the city and the city police department, which I understand the civil unrest. I understand and respect Black Lives Matter. I went to a lot of the protests, I believe, and I was arrested outside in front of my barbershop, you know, to me, and detained when I shouldn't have been, in my opinion, right? So I've lived this. You understand what I'm saying? But at the same time, Evan, to say to defund the police, when we know most of our, we just had 17 homicides in our city. 17, Evan, people have lost their lives in this city. About four of them during those protests. Nobody came out and protest for those 17 families, for those 17 people that were gunned down and murdered in our streets of this city, where their family is traumatized and the community is traumatized. There's not that passion that we see. If Black lives matter, then all Black lives should matter. And it matter at what hand that they're taken from. So I think we need a more comprehensive approach. And I think we should sit down with the community, which we have been, and come up with how can we begin to look at all of our systems and structures with the and hold people accountable, whether that's businesses, whether that's education, whether that's programming, the CBOs. We have to hold everybody accountable. I'm looking at CNN today, and they talked about how only out of Forbes, there's only like three Black executives on the Forbes companies. This is part of the issue that has to be a part of the overall conversation when we talk about defunding or reimagining. We have to look at all of it, and we have to hold everybody accountable for all Black lives.
Can I respond to that just really quickly?
Yeah, go ahead, Stanley.
Willie, I really, your commentary just makes me extremely sad, because you are a Black man in a position of power. You are the vice president of city council. You have say over where funding goes and into what communities it goes to. The communities who have violence and are suffering because they've lost families, you have the power to allocate resources to those communities so they don't continue to suffer from violence and scarcity. Yet you're on here saying all these things.
That's exactly what I'm doing every day.
Hold on, Willie.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
I'll let you respond, but go ahead, Stanley.
Right. And just how, so you, we're talking about police violence, and you just repeated the exact Trump-like white supremacist ideology of derailing the conversation into Black-on-Black crime. You have to think about decolonization of all of us and how we can unlearn these things that we continue to repeat and how dangerous they are. I agree, violence in our communities needs to be resolved, and we are telling you, take money away from the police and give those resources to those communities we're from.
Go ahead, Vice President Lightfoot.
Evan, here's the reality of it, right? Like I said, I live this every day. I'm out here every day talking to our people in the barbershop, listening to their concerns, hearing what bothers them. And what I got people in my shop. I got grandmothers and pastors and telling me, son, you better not defund the police. We want our police. We love our police. We respect our police. In this community, I'm not talking about the suburbs. Over the 900 emails we got, no, majority of them were people from the suburbs who don't even pay to city taxes, okay? I'm talking about people who live in this community. I'm born and raised in Rochester, very connected to this community every day, listening to people every day, including right now today, listening to people who are listening to this conversation right now who disagree with what people are saying about defund the police. They totally disagree. So if I have to, as she says, be as a Black man, as a leader, and as someone who has to listen to, because I'm elected by the people for the people, so I have to listen to all people and not just a selective group of folks.
Councilmember Ortiz, I'd like your thoughts on the same situation.
Great. Thank you so much. So, listen, I am not a law enforcement expert. I am not a social emotional trauma informed expert. And so what I envision is the opportunity for folks to come to the table, as you know, we've done. But I think More so we need subject matter experts at this table to really figure out how exactly to make this happen. I don't think anybody disagrees with the fact that it has to happen, that more resources have to go into the underlying root causes of why some of these things happen. So I'm there. I'm just not an expert of how exactly to get that done. And so what I envision is a process where all voices are at the table, those that are pro and those that are against, and have an opportunity for everyone to be heard and come up with something that works for all, where there is a combination where, a significant amount of resources goes towards the types of ideas that both Stanley and Mary are talking about. Again, I'm just not exactly sure how to do that, but I am most certainly willing to go down that road. But by the same token, I think if you even look at other countries that have the lowest crime rates, have done wonders with police reform, even they have still some amount of police law enforcement officers. And so I do think that there has to be a balance between the two. But I also think that when we start to go down here, we will find the best path that works for Rochester, because there are differing voices. And as elected officials, we do have to pay attention to all. I am completely sympathetic and understanding. I grew up in this city myself, lived on the Northeast side my whole life, pretty much, and have absolutely experienced some of these things. My brother, my family, all of those things. But I do think that there should be a balance. And even if we were to divert as much of the resources as they're suggesting today, it doesn't mean crime will end tomorrow. And so I just want to be careful about the fact that when these folks are, if they're experts, social workers, therapists that may show up at calls that are more appropriate for them, great. How do we still ensure that those folks are also protected? It doesn't necessarily mean that those folks may not potentially be hurt either. And so we have to, for me, think through all the various scenarios to make sure that we are making the best decision possible, having all voices at the table. And I think it's a combo. And certainly more of the resources diverted to the things that both Stanley and Mary have mentioned.
Well, on that point, I want to get a couple of listener comments that are very different. I'll take a phone call in a second. Let me get an email from Nathan, who identifies himself as a person who is not white and a resident of the city of Rochester. He writes the following: "Not having a local police force concerns me as a non-white resident of Rochester. By shifting the burden to the state or county, it just takes the local control over policing away. Locally, it might just kick the can of responsibility to another agency. Totally eliminating police is a concern. I really want to hear the thoughts on how to deal with violent situations that will happen until total societal change happens, which I don't think will happen if we just defund police and replace them with social workers or other agencies in the next year." So Nathan is saying, let me ask Stanley and Mary, who are in favor, again, of the more significant cuts or elimination of police. Stanley, Nathan wants to know, he says that he really wants to hear thoughts on how to deal with violent situations that will happen.
So the police don't deter crime. They show up after things have happened. And I think what Nathan is concerned about things that prevent behavior that he may deem as crime. So first of all, once again, it goes back to resources. We know that when there's scarcity, when there is diminished access to resources, when there's racism and a lack of equity, behaviors occur that people deem as crime. So to address that concern, it goes back to putting resources into addressing some of the problems you would see in different communities. Instead of having police show up when the crimes are over, we also know the police clearance rate is very low. So they're not even very good at solving crime. So I don't think that more police, once again, is a solution, or not defunding them is a solution. But the solution to address crime is giving resources to communities that have been redlined and affected by institutional racism.
Okay. Councilmember Lightfoot, does that work for you?
Of course not, Evan. And so the fact of the matter is, if you ask 9 different advocates where to give the resources to, you're going to get 9 different answers. So we stop. Let's say we took $50 million right now, and we say, okay, who we give it to? Where's it going? You get 9 different answers, which that by itself is problematic, right? So I would say that I kind of agree with the gentleman that called in, and I would say that, again, I believe we have to have a sit-down with all parties, and I think the commission is a great start to move forward. We should have some action items that that are timely. This is something that shouldn't drag along. We should get it done, and we should really begin to look at, reimagine how this looks at. And I agree with my council person Ortiz and her approach towards all of this. I think that she's right on the button. She hit it right on the button. That we just have to get like minds, get the professionals and everyone, the advocates, everybody at the table, and let's figure out what this could look like.
So, Councilmember Lupien, I do hear what Stanley Martin is saying, at least, and I'm going to try to represent this fairly, is all of the structural reasons that lead to what is, as Stanley says, what is deemed to be crime, have to be examined and attended to with the prioritization of funds via a council's budget. And I do understand that. At the same time, I understand why polling currently is heavily against abolition, even among Black Americans or non-white citizens like Nathan, who do have this question of, let's say you cut 50% or 100% right now. What happens in a violent situation now? And I do understand what Stanley is saying, but I've got a flood of email from people saying, that doesn't work for me. Like, who are we supposed to call? What happens? What would you say to them, Mary Lupien?
Yeah, so I'm not advocating for abolition right now. I would love for us to get into a place in our society where we do have the community supports in place, where where we've invested in the community, where we have people who are trained to respond to these calls, where we have restorative justice. You know, if somebody does wrong someone, that we can make it right as a community. But you know, we're not there. In the short term, I think we will still have officers, but they're going to be dealing with the 7% of violent crime that occurs in Rochester. You know, it's only 7%. The rest of it, the majority of crime in Rochester is property crimes. And we know the source of that. When people have what they need, you know, they don't rob. You know, the point that I think it's Kim Jones made really eloquently is that the looting happened because this is people's one chance to get that thing. You know, they don't have the opportunity to get it other times. So we know the things that prevent crime, and it's not the police. You know, the police patrol, you know, on my block, and maybe the people who deal drugs will go, you know, they'll move to another block if this block gets over policed, but the problem doesn't go away. The police don't prevent domestic violence. They don't prevent murders, and they do a really crappy job at solving them. You know, I think we still need an investigative unit, one that doesn't violate people's civil rights, but you know, that can hold people accountable. But we have to move away from this punitive system that we have. That you know, the mothers and grandmothers in the Black community are losing their children to the criminal justice system, and you know, the mass incarceration and the school to prison pipeline, we know how these things happen. And so let's put the focus there. And to you know, Willie's point about this being on the county, the city has a responsibility. And, you know, I talked to council members in Eugene, Oregon and in Minneapolis, and Minneapolis has a youth violence prevention program. And, you know, they contract with, you know, the same as here, the county does the social services and the mental health, but they actually pay the county for county employees to work in the city department. So there's ways that we can share services with the county, but it doesn't mean that we abdicate our responsibility to take care of our people where we can. And, you know, we have an eviction crisis coming our way, which is going to affect Rochester in really unknown ways. Once this moratorium, you know, the moratorium ended and the eviction cases are going to be coming through. And when families are destabilized by losing their housing, all kinds of things go off in a family's future. You know, we know, as a school teacher, we know adverse childhood experiences, as they're called, the more a child has, it's exponential, you know, the likelihood that they will become just as involved or addicted. And I understand that those are long-term things, but we have to start somewhere. And so to kind of sum it all up, I think we'll still have officers in the short term to respond to those 7% of violent crimes and hopefully diverting to, you know, a crisis team, the things that can be held there. And then with the money saved, we can invest in our community to really create that public safety that we're talking about.
I've got to get one more quick call. Luke, you got 30 seconds. Got to keep it tight. Go ahead.
Yeah, so thanks for taking my call. It's like, why do we believe that an organization that year after year after year fails to do what it says that it's doing, why do we still think, like, every year we just, oh, yeah, the police, let's try again. And maybe if we tweak it a little bit, now they'll finally, you know, and I think that we totally need to rethink that because it's clear, the evidence shows what they say they've been doing.
All right, so Luke, let me just jump in. It was cutting out a little bit, but Willie Lightfoot, he was going to direct it at you. I'll let you respond to this as we close up here. He says, why are we still investing in an organization that, in Luke's words, fails to do what it's supposed to be doing?
Yeah, the same reason why we're investing in the city school district, the same reason why we're investing in all these other systems that don't work, because I agree with what Stanley says, that we've been conditioned to invest in these things that we think are working, but deep down inside, they're all rooted in systemic and structural racism. Until we begin to deal with the root of all of these problems, we're going to keep getting the same reaction. I would say that also it was mentioned that the police department does a terrible job of solving these homicide crimes. That's actually untrue. The police department, RPD, has a 90% rate on solving homicides. So they actually do an amazing job.
It's actually 20%. It's 20% of non-fatal shootings.
Not for homicide.
20 non-fatal shootings? Non-fatal, yes, yep.
Okay. Listen, I do appreciate the fact that you're all willing to come on, and maybe we need to do this all day or several times a week.
Yeah.
It's important, and we're gonna keep having these conversations, and I appreciate it. Let me say, Stanley Martin, thanks for the availability and the explanation.
Thank you.
Please stay in touch. And council members Mary Lupi and Willie Lightfoot, Jackie Ortiz. Willie, I know you're at work. You're all working. Thanks for making the time. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
This is not the only conversation we're going to have on this. Much more to come on this subject and more connections coming up next.